Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We don't have a very good track record when it comes to taking care of our rivers. We have erected dams, we've changed the river's courses, we've twisted and polluted them with sewage and runoff from fertilizers. Now we're learning how to clean them up. In Columbus, the Olentangy River is the subject of a big cleanup project that entails fewer dams, improved water quality, and a shift in how those along its banks relate to the river. You might not recognize it right now if you're crossing the bridges over nearby campus. That's what we're going to talk about. If you've been wondering what they're up to, that's what we're going to talk about this hour and much, much more. Joining us now is Laura Shin. She's the director of planning at Ohio State University, and she's been working to restore the Olentangy River, managing that project where it winds through the campus. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you.
When something needs to be restored, that means somewhere down the line something went wrong. Can you tell us what went wrong with the Olentangy?
I think the Olentangy is a good example of a river that in an urban corridor that has been urbanized and made into a much more artificial river than it ever was. The first insult against the Olentangy was actually moving it for the Ohio Stadium, which happened in the late 1920s. And after that, we've continued to channel it and dam it, as you've mentioned. Some of those dams, the particular one we're talking about today, the Fifth Avenue Dam, was done actually because OSU used the water for cooling. And so in 1935, the Fifth Avenue Dam was erected. A lot of the other dams on the Olentangy were done for the purposes of utilities, primarily storm and sanitary sewers. And it was just an easier way to cross the river than to dig down and pump and actually bore underneath the river.
Oh, so the utilities are propped up.
In the dam.
In the dam.
Right, right.
And what do they do now?
Well, we've changed our philosophy a lot about the river, of course. I think that the utilities, the dams that have utilities, will take a lot longer to take out, obviously, because you've got to relocate those utilities. Sometimes now they'll actually go underneath the river level, or they'll just simply find other alternatives for routing them. So that they can get them. Sometimes they'll use roadway projects or bridge projects to do that. So we've learned a lot about what we don't want to do to our rivers, as you say. We've learned quite a bit in the last few years. The main problem, I think, with the Olentangy was really the impoundment. The dams cause pools, and it's that stagnant water that sits behind the pool that really negatively impacts the water quality of the water. A free-flowing river, it's sort of all about motion. It's about moving the water and moving it in different speeds at different points in the river that really makes it a healthy river.
Yeah, you want to see it waves, or you want to see motion, and you don't very much.
Right.
Why does it, if you've removed the dams, why is the Olentangy look so low now?
Well, it's because the Olentangy is a fairly wide and flat river to begin with.
Okay.
And the bottom of it is actually fairly flat. There's not a lot of drop in the river. And so that's one of the things that was a challenge with this project, that if we were to simply let the river decide where it wanted to be a channel, first of all, it's fairly constrained by structures such as flood control berms and highways and the way we've built up our roads along it. So it really wouldn't have a whole lot of choice where to go, but it also would take a while. And it's a combination of the lack of topography, or the lack of slope in the ground, just enough to let the water flow. But
there's
not
no
enough
slope in Columbus?
No, there's no, not much slope in Columbus. And the other factor that plays into it is the soil type. So we have very silty clay soils. And so the idea that the river would quickly create a channel, it's just not going to happen in these conditions. And so that was one of the reasons why we chose to go with a more aggressive and more engineered restoration, was to really make the river look better sooner, partly because it's so visible, but also because we knew that any plant establishment would take a long time if the river's constantly moving and meandering.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Olentangy River and the big cleanup project that's underway down along the OSU campus, if you've seen it and are wondering about it. My guest right now, Laura Shin, she's the project manager for the river restoration. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, you mentioned that, you know, all for the Buckeyes, you know, for the love of the Buckeyes, they moved the river to build the stadium. How different would the river be if it had never been moved? Was the topography more natural, and did it have a different kind of flow back then?
The river would have come a lot closer up around where the stadium is. The river originally came closer to the sort of edge of the historic campus. And so we would have had less land on the east side of the river. That would have been one difference. The river also had a lot of islands that it flowed around. Instead of being one large, wide channel, it was, or pool, in this case with the dam, before the dam came out, we actually had several channels and islands. And so I think it, you know, it wasn't just the stadium. That was the project that was the catalyst. But it was the idea that as the university was expanding to the west, because to the east, south, and north, we were somewhat constrained by existing development. That was really the only way to expand. And so it was about creating more kind of expansion space. And then eventually, of course, we expanded across the river. And one of the interesting—
You can't stop OSU.
Right. One of the interesting things as a planner at OSU and looking at historic plans, we've been trying to figure out how to make the river more of an amenity since our 1962 plan, which had a very different approach. But it's definitely been a subject of discussion over many, many years at the university.
You said the 1962 plan, there was a plan for the river back then?
There was an idea that the river would become more of an integral part of campus, and their idea was actually to build housing along the river. They had a vision of several much more open and glassy towers than what you see today in Lincoln and Morrill, but they were going to build several of those residential towers for students along the river. And so the idea that it could be an amenity visually and also for recreation.
And so how has obviously they're not building big student housing along it, but otherwise, in philosophically, how has the approach changed?
Well, we would, over time, and this is, again, a long, long-term project, we have visions in our current master plan, and actually our previous master plan also talked about trying to figure out a way to make the river more approachable. We have berms that we built along it on the OSU side, and those really visually and physically separate the river. So the Fifth Avenue dam removal, we see as sort of a first step in a longer project that would actually bring those berms down, create even more floodplain, create more recreation space, and then really have a campus that can see and approach the river in a much more direct way.
I thought, and this is just my ignorance speaking, that when the dam came down, the river would be more, would be deeper, there would be more water. Mm-hmm. why isn't there more water if the dam came down?
Well, I think it's partly because the dam was actually a fairly tall dam. It was much taller than a lot of the other ones, so it's actually holding quite a bit of water back. And I think just because the river's flowing more naturally, it moves downstream more quickly, and so what you're seeing is it will be a narrower. It is in some ways deeper. I mean, the channel itself is actually somewhat deeper than the existing river, which was much wider and flatter. But again, it looks like a lot less water because you're constraining it to a narrower channel. With the heavy rain we've had, it really doesn't look a whole lot different than it
exactly.
did previously.
Exactly.
But that'll happen. And what'll happen is that as that river recedes, it'll recede much more quickly because it's not constrained by the dam. So you'll see much more fluctuation in the levels. But we're taking what used to be covered by water and making that into floodplain, so there'll be more places for the water to settle through, which is better for the quality as it infiltrates. The vegetation we're putting would help treat that water. We're creating wetlands at the side so that when it does overflow the banks, there's a place for that water to sit and be treated before it comes back into the river.
Will the river be usable for watercraft? I mean, for watercraft?
It actually, with the Lowhead Dam gone, it'll actually be much safer. The dams create a hydraulic function that actually can suck boats under
right.
and keep people underneath the water. As you know, there was a death at the Fifth Avenue Dam a number of years ago as a result of that. So it'll be much safer for smaller crafts such as kayaks and canoes. The unfortunate result was that the larger craft, like the crew would use, cannot navigate because it is a much narrower channel. The crew's been moved downtown, and my understanding is with the plans for the Main Street Dam downtown, which is also slated for removal, which also does not have utilities in it, will allow for the crew to continue to use that stretch in the downtown area.
Jake in Westerville, you're on the air with Laura Shin. She's a project manager for the River Restoration on the Olentangy River. Welcome.
Hey, Laura, how's it going?
Hi.
I had a quick question. As a student at OSU, is there any way that I can get involved with the restoration project?
There are a number of cleanups slated for the fall once students come back, which is a little earlier this year than it has been in the past. We're trying to organize one right now for, I believe it's the second weekend that students are back. So look for information on that. The students have been very interested in becoming involved in the river, and what we've been trying to do is focus them on projects that happen outside the work zone, because the contractor will still be working in their construction zone during that time frame. The other possibility is for the long term of the river, we will be looking for volunteer groups to help control some of the non-native invasive plants so that the native plants that we've planted can take over and really grow in and become healthy.
Thank you, Jake.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Yep. If you have a question, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you've wondered what's going on down on the Old Tangi River along the OSU campus, this is your chance to find out. How long, what's the larger timeline for the restoration of the Old Tangi?
Well, there's a couple different timelines. The project itself will be completed in the spring, in the spring of 2014. Initially, we were hoping to get it all done this year, but because of the large amount of water we've had, the channel restoration is a little bit behind and would have pushed planting way into the heat of the summer. So rather than do that, we'll do some planting in the fall and then again in the spring, and that'll kind of complete the project May or so of next year. Then there's a five-year monitoring period that, because of the permits from the Corps of Engineers for actually restoring the river, they're required to monitor the stability of the channel and all the structures that they build in the channel, as well as the growth of the plants, to make sure that the plants are stable and grown in and are taking root and taking hold. And the city's responsible for that for a five-year period. And then after that, I think it really becomes a kind of the community's role to help keep that moving. And again, we'll be organizing. There's a number of groups, FLO, and some of the student groups, particularly in environmental and natural resources, have organized cleanups and ongoing planting or plant removal of the invasives so that things won't grow in and choke out the good plants.
How is this working with the wetlands research facility up along the Olentangy?
The wetlands actually are above another low head dam that probably won't come out very soon.
It's one of the utility.
Right. It's one of the dams with utilities in it. The wetlands is really more about looking at removing or redirecting the water from the river, treating it and putting it back in and testing it and making sure it's cleaner. So to some degree, the research that was done there is informing the wetlands, the design of the wetlands in the restoration project. And it's all, again, part of the same watershed. So that helps with the cleaning of the water. And the former director of the wetlands was, of course, a great supporter of the project. He was very interested in it, and I hope that he's now in Florida teaching down there, and I hope that he'll come back and see it once it's all complete and enjoy that he was a part of a real big impetus in getting that to happen.
We have an email from John. He writes, a couple areas of the river clearly had sewer runoff dump points marked. A couple, unfortunately, stank rather badly. It's been a while since I've been in the area, but I don't remember anything like that before. Has something changed, and or can you speak to the sewer runoffs going into the Olentangy? Are there any concerns with water quality? I was curious since I noticed some people illicitly swimming in the river north of Lane Avenue yesterday. Okay, a couple observations there, John. Thank you.
Interesting. Well, at least they were north of the project, so the contractors weren't responsible for their safety. But I think that there is actually a part of the river plan for the outlets of the storm sewers. Those have to remain, unfortunately. As far as the river project itself, that's one of the uses of the wetlands that are being created, is to actually treat that so that the stormwater runoff comes off and sits in a wetland area for some time and then empties into the river. So that will help with some of the treatment and hopefully will help with some of the odor as well. The longer-term plan that the city has for that is that they are actually creating a whole series of tunnels that will allow the water to sit and wait until there's capacity in the treatment plant. I should maybe say, and I'm not sure how much your listeners are aware, but the combined sewer overflows are really one of the major causes of the odor. And that's where the sanitary and the storm sewer are in the same pipe, and so it all goes to the treatment plant. Unfortunately, the treatment plant only has limited capacity and is only really built for sanitary sewer capacity. So it's treating water it doesn't need to. What the city has come up with a plan is to create tanks and underground tunnels that will actually hold that water until there's capacity in the treatment plant. The other option would be obviously to separate the sewers, but a lot of those sewers are under heavily developed areas and older neighborhoods, and that would just be cost prohibitive and really disruptive to the existing city fabric.
My guest is Laura Shin. She's project manager for the Olentangy River Restoration. She'll stay with us this hour. Coming up, we're going to, with the magic of radio, travel to Sheboygan, Wisconsin, and learn about a 30-year restoration project of the Sheboygan River. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Once a river starts to die, it can take a long time and a lot of work and money to bring it back. In the city of Sheboygan in east central Wisconsin along Lake Michigan, 30 years and tens of millions of dollars have been spent to restore the city's namesake river. Last year alone, $70 million was spent on dredging and habitat restoration. Joining us from Sheboygan is Chad Palaszczuk. He's director of planning and development for the city. Welcome to the show, Chad.
Thank you.
I mentioned $70 million for dredging and habitat restoration just last year alone. What has been the total price tag?
The total price tag has been about $100 million. It started out, this is about a five-year project with some dredging that had happened further upstream to remove some significant contamination at near the source of where this PCB contamination originally originated from. The stuff that was completed last year was the last leg, if you will, of the cleanup where the Sheboygan River enters Lake Michigan. The unfortunate part about that is that's an urban section of the river that kind of spans the entire city and has had the most impact on what recreational use happens in that area.
So what used to happen? Nothing? Or are you looking for more recreational use, or will it inhibit it?
At this stage, well, there was 30 years of restrictions on dredging,
okay. Mm-hmm.
So there was never any dredging that had occurred in the section of the river, and it's a very the urban section of the river is used for commercial fishing and recreational fishing, charter fishing. So for a lot of years, there was a lot of impediments with the existing dockage along the river because they couldn't dredge the river. In some areas of the river, it was less than 2 feet deep.
Okay, so the restrictions on dredging were because of all the docks.
The restrictions on dredging were related to the PCB contamination
okay.
in the river and EPA as designating the river an area of concern under the Superfund program would not allow for dredging to occur unless it was tested and taken to a certified landfill.
So I understand that the restoration was a 30-year process. What spurred it in the first place? Was it the EPA? Was it the pollution?
Yes. And I think the reason it's a 30-year process, it's been designated as a Superfund site for 30 years. And the reason that I think that it took so long is there was never any money dedicated to coming in and making, you know, getting the cleanup done until the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative came around under President Obama. At that stage, there was actually funding allocated, and it was put on EPA's list of sites that they felt that they could clean up in relatively short order if they put, you know, the upwards of $70 million at it and get it cleaned up and hopefully in the end get it off the area of concern list.
Talking with Chad Palaszczuk, he's Director of Planning and Development for the City of Sheboygan, and we're talking about the restoration of the Sheboygan River in eastern Wisconsin along Lake Michigan. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What was the hardest part of getting the river back into shape?
Well, I think that The hardest part is it continues to be a struggle, is even after a year of having it completed, is really getting the public to understand that the river is not a contaminated area anymore, and that in the future, which we're hoping in the very near future, that based on the habitat restoration projects that have occurred and all the dredging that has occurred, this once black hole of this community and the region definitely is on the improvement, and that, we can start seeing. One of the things that I've always seen is, you don't see the people, the father and the son or the families out there fishing because there's fish advisories and stuff. So we're hoping that in the future that stuff can all be lifted, and that it can be used as a recreational asset in the community versus a black hole.
Aside from cleaning up the river itself, you mentioned the dredging. Were there other changes to help keep the river clean, to the infrastructure or laws regarding runoff and drainage and that sort of thing?
There is. A lot of the runoff issues happen in rural areas outside of the city of Sheboygan. Our county planning and conservation department has taken a very proactive approach in working with farmers and dealing with crop runoffs and solids and stuff upstream that end up in the river. Ultimately, I think we're a farming area. The county is, got 50% farming in the rural area. So I think there's always going to be that concern of sediment dumping in. The difference now, I think, is now that the contamination is removed and the restrictions on dredging are removed, the city can go in and do dredging projects as part of a maintenance plan and not have to worry about contamination issues.
Every city would love a river. Is there much thought about development now around the river or changing the development around the river?
There is. I think that's one of the outcomes that's going to come out of this, and there's already been interest in the areas adjacent to the river now that it's more usable and they can have docks for housing and kind of moving away from that industrial sector that has historically been located along the river and in these Midwest communities. I think there's interest from a number of developers in our area, at least, that have shown interest in property that could have a better use than the industrial and the commercial that has historically been along the river. So I think going forward, we've targeted some key redevelopment areas that could bring some opportunity for, new uses and bringing those people back down on the river through residential housing.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Just because the river's restoration is officially completed, does that mean all the work is done?
Yes, all the work is completed. They finished up the last of some minor work this spring, and as of now, it's 100% done. There's some habitat restoration work that's being some minor stuff from washouts and stuff that's being done. But otherwise, EPA has designated that the river, all the river projects and the $70 million is complete, and that it's now just the monitoring going forward to monitor the fact of the levels in fish and different kinds of vertebrates and stuff goes down from PCB contamination and ultimately get this river off of this area of concern listing.
That PCB contamination, that occurred a long time ago?
Yeah, it occurred 30-some years ago at a company called Tecumseh Products that made engines upstream of the city of Sheboygan, actually in an adjacent community called Sheboygan Falls, and it had washed down historically over the years in the river and basically contaminated the entire stretch of 14 miles.
And then as far as the rural runoff, meaning agricultural runoff, what are there any new restrictions on that?
There has been. There actually was new restrictions that have been put into place in the last 10 years that have really restricted how farmers operate and, the sediment runoff related to total suspended solids and stuff in the river. And so farming practices have changed in the last 10 years for the better. And I think, time will tell that there's obviously always that concern of runoff, but I think overall the stuff is in order to make the improvement.
You mentioned the President's Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. Are there any other rivers or, I guess the Sheboygan River was part of this because it feeds into the Great Lake.
Correct. There's 43 in the Great Lakes region. There's 43 rivers that are considered area of concerns under the EPA's designation. And the reason I think Sheboygan has historically been one that's been on their list for, obviously these 30 years, and there just wasn't, like I said before, funding to get this completed. And for some reason, I think EPA just made the decision that they were going to allocate the funds and get in and do this in 1 year and get this done, and that's exactly what they did.
So does the river look different?
I don't believe the river looks different. There's kind of that perception in the community that the river is going to end up looking like the Bahamas. That is not the case. There's still stormwater discharges and stuff that are happening that are within the DNR's, our local Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources limits for dumping into the river. So there's still sedimentation and stuff happening in the river, and under rain events, the river is not crystal blue. I think the bigger impact, and people don't see it, but is really that the contamination is gone that had historically collected in the river sediments at the bottom of the river.
Uh-huh.
So the river is, the color has not changed, but the fact that the contamination is gone, and that that dredging can occur and we don't have to be worried about development that happens along the river impacting any kind of contamination, which can lead into huge costs for developers, is that, that's gone, and we can move forward without having the sedimentation on the bottom.
Laura Shim, when we talked earlier about the sewer runoff dump points that the email from John mentioned, when you said those are going to remain, basically, that's because those fall within
the state limits.
Right. I mean, the city is under a consent decree with EPA to clean that up, and that's their wet weather plan, is this idea of creating these tunnels and underground tanks that will help store that so that it won't overflow. What happens is when the treatment plant is exceeded, when its capacity is exceeded, it overflows into the river because that's where the stormwater goes. So what'll happen now is that it'll all sit and wait until the treatment plant has the capacity to treat it, and then it'll be treated in the treatment plant. Now, anything that does continue to overflow in the meantime, that's a very long-term plan. I think it's like a 40-year plan that the mm-hmm. city has. Anything that does continue to run off, whether it's just runoff from parking lots or urban areas, will actually be treated in those wetlands before it's released to the river.
Chad Pelishek, you said that people were using the river for boating and that sort of thing, right?
Correct.
So that's not a behavior that has to change. That people, it sounds like they'll probably use it more often for boating, right?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of, with the sedimentation that had occurred over the years, there was a lot of unusable docking along the river, and people were forced to look other areas.
Okay.
This year, those docks have come back, and people are now starting to dock their boats back in areas where they historically haven't been able to. So I think the commercial recreational side of the fishing industry, which is a huge piece of the economy of Sheboygan, is definitely on the rise. And I think, that the fishermen are telling us that it's a lot better for them knowing that they don't have to worry about, there was just a designated channel, if you will, and they had to stay within that area mm-hmm. because everything else was too shallow to mm-hmm. utilize it. So from a commercial standpoint, it's great. The other positive piece about it is we've got the facilities developed for Great Lakes cruise vessels to stop in port here. Mm. And in the past, they have done that before the river basically sedimented across. So now we're back to depths of 15 to 18 feet, which would allow for these types of larger boats to come in and port here and then people to visit the community.
Marissa in Dublin, you're on the air with Chad Pelishek of the city of Sheboygan. Welcome.
Marissa?
Are you Martha?
Yes.
Sorry, I had the wrong, they gave me a wrong name. Go ahead, Martha.
Well, that's okay. In regard to your topic today, it's very timely. Very recently, the New York Times had a huge cover story about the Great Lakes, and they said that the money had been set aside year after year after year, but they have failed to do the dredging that is necessary to make the lakes lively and commercially available. And then also, I would like to know, when these corporations go into Lake Erie and take water from Lake Erie, is that water metered out to these corporations? Because I know just recently Kasich signed Bill 473, which allows people like Culligan Water and then the Maumee Valley Water Bottling Company to take all the water they want out of the Great Lakes. And is that water metered? Because
okay.
I know the...
Okay, well, let's get to the question. I don't know if Chad Pelishek can answer that or not, but there is the Great Lakes Water Use Advisory Commission, I think it is. I'm not sure. But, Chad, are you...
There's a great, it's actually the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Seaway Mayor's Initiative, which is a group of all the mayors along the Great Lakes that have historically got together to deal with trying to, you know, hold back from people tapping in and pulling water out of the Great Lakes. And I'm not familiar with the Lake Erie area, but I can tell you the Lake Michigan area, there's a couple communities in the Milwaukee metropolitan area that had problems with their drinking water and wanted to go into Lake Michigan to get their water, and they were outside of the water basin. So it was actually a vote of all of the mayors that make up this group of kind of this coalition, whether that to allow this community to go in, and I believe they turned them down. So there is means in place to restrict people from just tapping into the Lake Michigan to pull water out for whether it's community needs or corporation needs.
All right. Marissa, thanks a lot for your call. And Chad Pelishek, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Chad Pelishek, he's the Director of Planning and Development for the city of Sheboygan, where they're just wrapping up a 30-year, a five-year restoration process on the Sheboygan River that flows right into Lake Michigan. Coming up, we're going to hear about more projects around the state of Ohio to improve the river. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Welcome back to All Sides with Dan Fisher. Randy Newman's 1972 song, Burn On, tells how the Cuyahoga River in northeastern Ohio became so choked with pollution that in 1969, the surface of the water literally caught fire. It wasn't the first time, but the 1969 incident became an infamous example of what can happen when a river is pushed too far. Once again, welcome back to All Sides with Dan Fisher. We're talking about what it takes to bring a river back to life. Joining us now is Bill Stanley of the Ohio Nature Conservancy. He is involved in several river restoration projects in Ohio through the Conservancy. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And also still with us, Laura Shin, the project manager for the Olentangy River Restoration. She is project director of planning at OSU. So, Bill, is it always possible to bring a river back from the dead? I guess the Cuyahoga is an example of apparently it has been brought back from the brink, but is there ever a river that does have a point of no return?
I would say it's with rivers, really, I can't say that they'd ever be completely dead. If you ever watched The Princess Bride, it was mostly dead. You know, there's that comment.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of like that. They may become mostly dead, but they can be brought back. I think it becomes a question of the expense and how it's going to be used and what the needs are for the people living there and your interests and goals for wildlife and other factors.
So in general, what's the public demand for fixing our rivers at this point, at least in Ohio?
I think people are recognizing problems with water quality in Ohio, and that's driving a lot of interest in stream restoration and just our waters in general with the harmful algal blooms, for example. You're seeing not only in Lake Erie, which is hugely important, but also obviously Grand Lake St. Mary's, it's been a major issue, and even in some of the state parks and waterways. And I think what you have to think about, too, is it's not just for the river, it's for the people, like you're kind of implying there. The streams can do a great job of filtering out pollutants if they're restored, if they have the meanders in them, if they have the natural floodplains, if they have the vegetation, both along the banks and in the stream. So they do provide a lot of value. I think that's helping to create more demand for stream restoration.
Right. It's not just about the rivers, but it's about the different streams that feed into the rivers. There's been a lot of conflict over that because of development and farming.
Right. That's right. Yeah. I think also people may not realize that most of our streams in Ohio have been altered in some way. Almost all of them have either been channelized in some way to drain water off for agriculture or other uses for development, or in other cases have been dammed or sometimes both. We do have some nice natural free-flowing streams in Ohio that are very healthy. And, of course, one that we know about that's very close, the Darby Creek, which is an amazing kind of a gem of a river right here close to Columbus.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We've been talking about the Olentangy River restoration and just in general. Still with us, Laura Shin from OSU. She's the project manager for the Olentangy River restoration. And also Bill Stanley. He's an assistant state director and the director of conservation at the Ohio Nature Conservancy. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Because of how we've moved things around and shifted the streams and monkeyed with the waterways as much as we have in Ohio and around the country, will our rivers ever be what they were 200 or 300 years ago, or is it impossible to even know anymore what they were?
That's a really interesting question. You know, you do hear accounts from early settlers of the streams in Ohio really being just full of fish and amazing wildlife all around them. I don't think that our goal really is to try to get back to that state. You know, whether it's possible or not, it's an open question. But the reality is we need agriculture. We need our food. That's a really important thing. All
need
of us,
eat.
Obviously.
Yeah, we yeah,
need
bad
to eat.
Habit.
We need water for drinking. We need water for industry. At the Nature Conservancy, we recognize that. And what we really want to try to do is come up with a good balance for meeting the needs of industry, agriculture, drinking water, and also nature. When we do think we can get those things at a level that really would be great for everybody.
There was an article in the paper this week about that we have the one great lake in Ohio and other great lakes. I think they named five or six of them, and all but one was man-made. Those glaciers stop just right at the Ohio northern border. We don't have the spring-fed lakes like, say, Michigan does and Wisconsin does. Would that make a difference? Or, well, of course, we just talked to the people in Sheboygan, and they were grappling with sort of the same problems, even though they have tons of lakes in Wisconsin.
When you say, would that make a difference?
In how, in the health of the rivers.
I think, the streams can be very healthy. The rivers can be very healthy. Even without that glaciation, I don't think that's really the major factor. I think it gets back to do they have the meanders in them? Are they straight, which is not natural?
Why is a meander important?
It helps when you think about a lot of water coming down, say in a big rainfall event, and you've got this channel. What happens is the rain goes through very, very quickly, can scour the bottom of that channel. Any living thing that was there is now washed out. Vegetation can get washed out. Any pollutants that might have been in the water just go right down stream into whatever water body is waiting down at the bottom. With the meander, it's going to slow down the river a lot. You got if you have a floodplain, it can store a lot more water. You've got vegetation to take up some of those pollutants. You've got vegetation. You have vegetation to trap sediments. You have insects and fish that, frankly, you know, insects that can actually need some of that nutrient to survive. So you have a natural processing of these pollutants. Even freshwater mussels, which people don't think a whole lot about. Some people here call them clams. Mm-hmm. They're important in filtering out bacteria, for example. So getting those meanders and that habitat back in that full diversity of life can really help to filter out the pollutants.
A couple questions, I think, for you, Lorshin. One email from Bill. He says, there is some construction just north of the French Fieldhouse and corresponding construction just across the river. What is that construction all about? When will it be completed? That is the Olentangy Restoration Project, right?
Yes, the Olentangy Project goes actually all the way up to Lane Avenue. So that's probably related to that project. The recently what occurred on the project was a shift between working on the southern edge to working now on the northern reach of the project area. And so the construction crews have moved their staging and their equipment up to the more northern reaches. So you may be seeing things like creating access roads and putting in the staging areas on some of our OSU parking lots.
Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Where will Ohio State get its water for its power plant now that they can't use the river water?
They have not been using the river water for quite some time. The water that is required is typically taken from city water supply, but we also do some recycling and treating of that water so that we can reuse it.
Thanks a lot, Steve. An email from Randy asks, will restoration include removing the dam in Clintonville located near Como Park? And that's just that series of dams that you're talking about that the utilities manage right at this point.
Currently, there's no funding or plans to remove that dam. It is listed in the city's downtown action plan as a very long-term goal to remove all of the dams on the Olentangy. My guess, if I were looking into a crystal ball, is that will coincide with whenever there's major work required on the utilities that go through those dams. I think it'll be a very difficult sell because of the cost to actually remove the utilities and then remove the dams. I think there's been some discussion about whether they can be altered in some way, but they're fairly low dams, and they really are primarily just covering the utilities. So I don't know if there's a lot of options to notching them or doing anything like that.
Did they have permission in the first place to build those dams? I mean, is that granted by some authority? Do we know?
That's an interesting question. I would assume they would have had to have gotten some kind of permission, depending on when they were built. But the restrictions requirements for that permission were probably less restrictive than they are now. I don't know, maybe you know.
Yeah, I know some of the earliest environmental laws related to water had to do with navigation and navigable waterways. So, I can't remember when the first laws were passed. They were, when those dams were built exactly, mm-hmm. but it's been probably at least 40, 50 years that you would have needed to get permission to put a dam on something like that. But I'm not sure exactly when those dams were built. I don't know.
And so presumably at some time there'll be need for major work or even replacement of those lines. And I think that's probably the best opportunity to see those go away.
And the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers would be the agency that would permit that construction now. Yeah.
Brian in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome, Brian.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Ann. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if maybe the money that we're spending on a lot of these restorations couldn't be better used to protect places like the Darby that actually are natural. There's so many parts of the river that for example, the Olentangy that we're talking about currently, that was channelized after the 1913 flood, and it's basically just a straight line drainage ditch that has nothing to do with the actual riverbed or anything. I guess the real riverbed goes underneath the OSU Stadium, so they'd probably have to tear the stadium out if they really wanted to restore the river to its natural state.
Well, that's an extent of restoration. I wasn't sure you were. That's not going to go that far.
No, we would not. I mean, obviously, we're restoring the river within the current limits of its flow. But I think it is an interesting question about the prioritization of those funds. I do know that concurrent with the restoration project, MORPC had a grant to do some watershed planning that went all the way up into Delaware and southern Marion County, because the Olentangy, the lower Olentangy watershed, does go all the way up into those counties. And that was really more about developing some protection, developing some conservation areas and declaring those and mapping those. So some efforts have been started in that area, but perhaps...
Yeah, I guess what I would say about that, it's a really interesting question. I think the Olentangy has some portions of it that are already in very good condition. And I think what you're looking at with removal of the dams is reconnecting a stream. And what's been interesting to see is the recovery of streams that are connected to say you've got a stream that's not in very good condition, but it's connected to a segment that is in very good condition. You remove the dam, restore the stream that was in poor condition. You actually see the fish and mussels and other species moving into their into that other stream very quickly. So the fact that there are some good segments to the Olentangy, I think it's got a very good chance of being a very robust, very diverse, really incredible stream in the future.
What are some of the ways that the Nature Conservancy is helping to clean up Ohio rivers?
Well, right now we're really focusing on developing a statewide program for streams and wetlands and restoration in the state. We're doing that because there has been a situation where restoration projects often have been fairly isolated and not always done strategically. You'll see a lot of different projects being funded by developers, frankly, that need to offset the impacts of their development. And those funds are being spread out in kind of piecemeal one-off projects. And as a result, they really haven't been that effective. So what we're trying to do is provide a mechanism for taking those funds, bringing them together, and using them more strategically and really thinking about some of the things that the last caller just asked. You know, what is the most important thing to happen in the watershed where this impact occurred, and really trying to pool the money and come up with projects that are going to be very effective.
There's a new program. Is it just, I think it's being proposed, that would give conservation groups like yours, like Nature Conservancy, the job of replacing the habitats that usually has gone to the developers who are not necessarily interested in it, but have to pay for it now because of regulations. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and where it is? I mean, is that really something that might happen?
It likely will happen. There are several groups that are proposing programs for part of the state or for wetlands and streams. We're proposing a program that would cover both wetlands and streams statewide. We are in the middle of the approval process with that. It's another process that's being run through the Army Corps of Engineers. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is also involved, Ohio EPA, Department of Natural Resources. So there are a number of different groups that are looking at what we're proposing and giving us advice and feedback. And again, the way that that would work would be that the developers, rather than being responsible for the what we call mitigation, mm-hmm. for doing the restoration work, they would send those funds that they normally would use themselves or for that purpose to the Ohio Water Development Authority, is our proposal, who would hold the funds. And then we would identify the best projects we possibly could find, work with consultants and other partners to design the good projects. And then once we had those approved by the Army Corps, the Ohio Water Development Authority would release the funds to us to do the restoration work. So that, in a nutshell, is how it would work.
Now, is that in legislation or is it just a dream at this point?
There actually was some legislation passed in Ohio to allow for the development of this type of program.
Okay.
So that has been in the last year. That happened. But we have to get approval. We need to get approval from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Okay.
It's really up to them to approve the program. There are other states with programs like this, so okay. we are not the first. There's one in Virginia. There's one in Maine. West Virginia has one. Kentucky actually has several different programs that cover their state. So this isn't really anything new. It's new for Ohio, but it's not new nationwide.
And developers are good with it?
I think... that's a good question. I think a lot of them will see this being a much simpler way for them to get have their offsets. I think it will be much simpler for them. This is not their business to do stream restoration, so they don't really understand necessarily. Some of them have done a very good job. Others, as you mentioned, it's not really their interest. It's not their expertise. I think they'll be happy to kind of pass off that obligation to another group. I think the question will be on how much it's going to cost. Okay. And those numbers haven't been figured out yet. So is it more or less expensive for them We don't have the answer yet, and I think that's going to, in the end, be an important factor in whether or not they like it.
The good old bottom line. Bill Stanley, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Bill Stanley, he's Assistant State Director and the Director of Conservation at the Ohio Nature Conservancy. And Laura Shin, thanks for staying with us this hour. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Laura Shin, she's Project Director of Planning at OSU, and she's also Project Manager for the Olentangy River Restoration. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.